Hello, it is Bootstrapped Web. I am Brian, and today I'm joined by not Jordan, but Ben Ornstein. Ben, how's it going?
Good, man. Psyched to be here.
Yeah.
And to come back on the cast. I noticed that I did this about a year ago, November 2018.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Wow. Yeah. So as regular listeners of this show know, Jordan and I have been pretty sporadic in our publishing schedule. We're not the best podcasters. And so we're both traveling and doing a lot of stuff. Actually today, I think Jordan is moving house. So I was chatting with Jordan and I was like, you know, maybe we should try to get episodes out a little bit more frequently. And when you or I'm traveling, we can just bring on one of our buddies to substitute in. So that's what we're doing today. Yeah.
I mean, as someone that listens to your show a lot, I like when I see a new one drop. So I support this endeavor.
You know, I have some trips coming up as well. So I'm sure, maybe you'll hear Jordan and someone else on the show sometime soon. We'll see. So Ben, I mean, most people probably listen to your podcast. And if they don't, they probably should. That's at Art of Product, you and Derek Reamer. It's another one of these bootstrapper podcasts. Mm-hmm. I like the trend.
The trend is increasing.
It is.
Right?
It is.
Like I think Derek and I were inspired by you and Jordan in the early days. And then now they seem to be multiplying. I've been listening to Out of Beta. And yep. Also another one just sprung up with the UserList co-founder and somebody else.
I think that guy does Bright and Early. Their new one, we're going to like butcher all these people's podcast names.
That's cool. It's cool. We're going to find it. Slow and Steady is what it's called.
Slow and Steady. That's it. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, yep. There's that one. There's a few other these like new bootstrapper podcasts that are just dropping, which is really good.
Yeah, I'm psyched about this happening. I think you've said this too. Like, I get the most out of people just sharing what they're doing and their story and not trying to make it a digestible thing. So it's just fun to follow along.
Yeah, it is a really good format. It's like nobody else in the world finds these type of podcasts interesting except for us and our people. And it's like this weird way for people in our circles to like stay in touch is like through these podcasts.
Yes. You know? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I actually have a friend who lives on the West Coast and he started a podcast with his wife and they just talk about like what's going on in their life. And I don't listen to all of them, but it's nice to be able to like just dip in and like get a little bit.
Yeah. That's so cool. I don't think my wife would ever go for co-hosting a podcast with me. So we'll see.
That's fair.
So, you know, why don't we just do kind of a regular Bootstrapped Web podcast or the bootstrapper format podcast, if you will. For those who haven't really been following your stuff, obviously you're a co-founder of Tuple. Why don't you tell us a quick bit about it and where are you guys at right now here in the summer of 2019?
Yeah, sure. So Tuple is an app to do remote pair programming on Macs. So it is screen share with audio. It gives you remote control of the screen you're looking at. And also we recently added webcam support so you can see the face of the person that you are pair programming with. And it's specifically built for developers for doing coding stuff together. So we launched back in January to our initial group of users. We pre-sold the product to a group of alpha users. Then we opened it up more and more steadily. We are now in August. It's been going well. We've been growing a lot. I think the plan is to basically go to 1.0 this month and say like, okay, like it's real. This is not a beta product anymore. It's good and people like it. What have we been up to? This week has been interesting. We're trying to ship a second version of our webcam feature. We're pretty consistent about shipping kind of a V1 of something that's pretty good and then asking people what they think of it and then refining it. So we're doing that. I'm like enjoying the hell out of this whole process. It's probably partly because it's going well. It's more fun than if it were failing.
I mean, it seems like just listening to you guys week to week, it does sound like every week it's like, yep, still growing, people still signing up, sales are going really well. Like are things going as well as it sounds like on the podcast? I mean, obviously there's things that we don't talk about on air, but like, what are we missing here? It's like, all be like rainbows and unicorns, right?
It's definitely not all rainbows and unicorns. We actually just had a pretty heated discussion where we are have some disagreements over how we should implement this latest thing and what we should prioritize. Not that it was like an outright fight, but we were like, you know, we did not agree. There's that, but I almost feel guilty or something, but like it kind of is going as well as it sounds. Like that's sort of an important thing to me, where I think part of the value of these podcasts is that you can hear the struggles. To whatever degree I was capable of, I would share if there were problems that were nagging me or we were struggling with. I think we've done some things pretty well. Some of this is due to us executing well on things, but also the world has been handing us some gifts at the same time that were out of our control.
You're like in this unique market where it's not like you came in and like you're inventing a completely new thing or a completely new category. It's like this category exists or it has existed, but there are no competitors in it.
There are competitors, but there are very few people with the same positioning as us, I would say. So there's lots of generic tools that will do screen sharing or remote control. There are almost no tools that say we are the remote pair programming app. Mm-hmm. I can basically think of one other. And so it's pretty lightweight competition in that way. Now, that's not to say that people don't think of other companies as our competitors. So for example, Zoom has a remote control feature on some plans. And so some people will test this out and say, we didn't like it more than Zoom for these reasons. Mm-hmm. So Zoom is technically a competitor of ours, even though they don't position themselves as such.
Right. You know, the other thing that I've been listening to a lot lately, whether it's your product or we recently saw the guys from UserList go from beta to quote unquote launched, is, and I'm thinking about this with ProcessKit, is like, I'm continuously questioning, what does it actually mean to launch? And what is the value of even calling your thing beta? And for me, I've really leaned against the, like, I just don't call it beta. I never really use the term beta at all. Mm-hmm. But people certainly say it to me, like, when is ProcessKit coming out of beta? And I'm like, you can buy it right now if you want. Like, it's not beta. Like, you know, so I feel a little bit like I'm not selling a real product if I'm calling it beta. You know, whether that's true or not, like, it's, I wonder if it leaves the wrong impression. And I'm also worried about getting the wrong feedback. Like, I want feedback from people who are looking at this as an actual real product in the real wild. And then the other question is, what does it mean to actually do a launch, or should there ever be a launch, or that sort of thing?
I mean, this has been very top of mind for me. So we had planned, and I said publicly that we were going to launch in August. The designer we were working with had some availability challenges, and I didn't quite do enough planning. At the end of the day, it was basically my fault. It was kind of like I looked at the schedule and I looked at what needed to be done, and I was like, I don't think we can actually hit this date with what we have. It looks like our like plan for a make a big noise launch in August is not going to happen. But as I stepped back and examined, like, what does that mean and how bad is this? It was kind of like, well, it's actually not so bad. So, like, we are publicly available. You can sign up for the app. We kind of still have that option in our back pocket of saying, hey, it's an official launch, whatever that means. We can draw a line in the sand and say, now we're launched after this date. So we can still do that later. So it's not too much of a blow. So a big motivation for us doing this launch was, like, people were pushing back on us and saying, like, it's like people would just like you said, they would assign the label of beta to us. Right. And we'd be like, no, it's real. Like, we have like lots of customers. We have like thousands of users at this point. It's not like a immature product. And they'd be like, yeah, but your website looks like it is.
Yeah.
And that was fair because we basically had this like original manifesto landing page that we had put up, you know, 18 months ago or something when we didn't have a product that just said like, someone ought to solve this and we're going to do it. I found that the people assigning us that label and thinking of us as sort of immature in a way went away quite a bit when we redid our marketing site. And like now it's like, here are the features we have and the things that we've done. And here's a demo video. You can actually see the app. It's real. That really seems to have gone away. So simultaneous with me kind of screwing up the launch date, failing to hit that, I was like, also, maybe we don't need it that badly because one of the problems it solves is doesn't seem to be a problem.
And actually what you were saying with the website, I feel like that's one element of it, right? And I'm also working on a design of a quote unquote real marketing site right now. Right now I have like my manifesto version of my thing still up there. So I guess that could be sort of like a launch, you know, and I plan to get that finished up and launched hopefully sometime in September. We'll see. It's kind of going through this, got the copy basically all finished out. I mostly have the layout down. I'm currently working through some revisions with an illustrator to get some graphics for the site. And then I'll finalize the design, build it out, and get that launched. I mean, I guess just back to the launch thing, I'm still kind of questioning like what really can you do to have like a big splashy announcement other than like get it up on Product Hunt and tweet about it. But we're all tweeting about it every day anyway. So it's like,
yeah. No. I've been kind of skeptical from the beginning that it would have a huge impact on the business. Like maybe we get a bit of a bump. I'm curious to talk to the UserList folks
Right.
So like, okay, you hit number one on Product Hunt. What did that lead to in terms of actual signups? And then churn on those signups later, like how many were just people checking it out and whatnot?
I feel like they did engineer that launch really well between the different announcements and the podcast tour and the Product Hunt and everything. And like I'm like terrible at that stuff. Like anytime I try to put something up on Product Hunt, it does terribly. But then the only things that I've ever done well are like when somebody else like puts it up and I don't even realize it until the day is halfway done.
Yeah, my hunch is that it doesn't really matter. I think if you did it really, really well, you could probably generate a nice spark that would be a good initial, like kind of getting the ball rolling, start a little bit of that word of mouth. And then if the product is actually good, maybe it can spread from there. But my guess is for most people, it doesn't actually do that much. And it's kind of like 2 days later, you're back to like, all right, like what's the next feature I'm going to ship? What's my next marketing hit?
Yeah.
It's not a make or break thing either way, I think.
Yeah. Without having the real marketing site in place, I have had some issues with just showing the world like what Process Kit is and how much of it has already been built and what it can do today and what's coming up next. And, you know, so like I get all these questions. Like, first of all, I get questions like, when are you going to start sending invites? And it's like, all right, well, I have been sending invites, but like people use it. We have customers and it's going. If you want your invite, here you go. Like that's what I tell people, you know? So there's some confusion over that. There's people are requesting very specific features, and I want to make sure that they know that those are actually in the product or that they're coming soon. So today I actually launched this new thing at processkit.com/roadmap. And it's sort of like a way to hold things over until the marketing site comes out. But I think I'm going to continue to have this page after that comes out. So it's basically,
I saw that page and I think it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's basically just a list of all the features that are in the app now. And then a shorter list of like four or five features that I know are in the near term roadmap that are like my next to build or currently building. And for each feature, you can like open it up and there's like a blurb and a video showing, like it's under 2 minute video showing that feature. And my thing was like, I need a page that I could very easily update as the product evolves and as the roadmap changes, you know, because before this, as sort of like a temporary thing, I slapped on like a video on the homepage of processkit.com that's just like an 8 minute walkthrough of the thing, which I made like 4 months ago. And it's already like way out of date, you know, because I'm literally shipping features every week now. So it's like,
that's awesome.
Or I'm like redesigning, you know, like improving the UI somehow, and the video shows the old UI and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm. I like this idea. We did this a little while back because we wanted to convey a similar thing to our customers. I find it especially nice when everyone's asking for the same thing to be like, we're definitely going to build that. We want to build it. And like, I'm not just saying that in the support message. Go check out tuple.app/roadmap. There it is, number three. You can see that it's on it's on a thing somewhere that says we're going to build it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And I've had questions from actual trial users who are like, how do I archive a project or something? Or some people are asking about these like core features. They're like, can I copy a process to a project, or can I reuse a process template? Which is like a very central core feature that obviously was one of the first things that I built.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't realize that's possible. And that maybe that speaks to the UI and the product a little bit, but there's nothing that informs them like as they're getting on board or signing, they're going to be able to do this, you know?
This has been a struggle with us as well, is like the education component. Like I've definitely, people ask us for stuff that we have already pretty frequently. And so we talk a lot about like, okay, what should we be doing around this and how can we do this better?
Right.
It's kind of nice because like, oh, like I wish it did X. Like it does. Congrats. Isn't that great? Like it's a fun message to send, but it's also like, okay, we're falling down in this way. We need to like, it'd be better if you just knew this.
Yeah. And you know, obviously like I've been talking about for the past few months, it's like we're constantly behind on stuff. So there's plenty of things that I should be designing and like an onboarding experience and all this stuff, but I'm building features every week, so I can't do that. And you know, this roadmap page was kind of like I literally spent like one day on it, just like a quick and dirty to like get something on the internet that I could show people, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this will help. I really like the like, not just I'm going to build this, but also we have these things already. I think we could, like that would help us too. I think that's a good tweak on that.
Yeah. Something kind of new on my mind this week, I would love to get your feedback on it. I'm considering hiring a developer. And the plan before this week was, okay, I'm continuing to build the product myself, design it, build it, all that. And I intend to continue to doing that. And the thought was the developer would be my first hire at some point. And that point would probably be later, like when we reach some level of MRR. You know, before I start paying myself, I have my bills paid from Audience Ops and all that. So like I figured like once we get to some level of MRR, I would immediately hire a developer and we would move much faster. We only have a very little bit of MRR right now. So, but my thinking all of a sudden is sort of like, why don't I just move that timeline up and get some kind of like part-time developer now, mm-hmm. move faster through this roadmap, and also just to work directly with me, that person and me actually collaborating directly on code and on features. And I'm still a new developer. So like that would help me both learn, but also move faster and bust through roadblocks much faster if I actually have somebody on the team. I have this kind of a nest egg of profit that I've been saving up for the year. I figured that at some point I would wait to deploy that on like some marketing tests or things like that. But you know, it might not hurt to just kind of get that ball rolling sooner rather than later. You know, because what I do now is I'm only capable of working on one feature at a time. And I can't work on a new feature until I ship the current one. And then even then, like sometimes I'll get stuck, obviously. And so I'll ask a friend for help, or frequently I'll go to CodeMentor.io and pay for an hour or two of some developer's time to help me work through something. I could continue to do that. That would be just fine. I think it's actually been a pretty efficient way to work, and I've become faster over time as well. But let me like paint like the ideal picture. I don't even know if this is totally possible or not, but the ideal would be get a really talented Ruby on Rails developer, someone with, you know, who really works with that platform quite a bit, works with me about 3 days a week on a part-time basis, ongoing, probably at least through the end of the year. And then hopefully if things go well, they ramp up to a full-time position. Of those 3 days a week for the next few months, probably like two of those days, they would be on their own working on a feature while I'm working on another feature. So we can do two at a time. And then maybe on that third day, so like one third of the time, it'll be like a pair programming thing, or we'll be working directly together on stuff. What are your thoughts?
I like it, especially with that focus on leveling you up too. Because then even if you just say, oh, you know what, I can't afford this, or the money ran out or whatever, you have taken a lot of like knowledge out of that interaction.
That's true. With my learning right now, I feel like I'm sort of plateauing in a way. Like,
yep.
And that's my own doing, because I'm most concerned with just getting the features built, and I'm not so concerned with learning anymore, you know? So like even when I hit a roadblock, I'm really just going to Code Mentor to have somebody like help me just figure out this one thing and so that I can get it shipped, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a question mark around getting the right person, but assuming you could get someone that has a good amount of experience and would hold like has high standards and cares, I think it would be really, really useful for you, because programming is such a deep field. There's just so many things. And so even though you're a good bit into it now, you will learn a lot still by working with someone. And unshockingly, as someone that founded a company whose job it is to make people pair more or let people pair more, I think pair programming is actually the best way to get better at programming. It's even better if you can sit next to them. That's great. Most people can't do that. Like if you couldn't do that, you know, you're doing it remotely, still better than working by yourself. There's just, because it's not just like, hey, can you review this code once I'm done? It's like seeing how someone attacks a problem. What do they do when they get that kind of error message? How do they arrange their windows? Oh, well, there's a keyboard shortcut for that. Wait, what did you just do? Wait, what did you just click? Like right, that experience, right. I don't think I've ever paired with anyone, and I've been doing this a long time, and like not learned some little workflow thing or seen something that they did that I liked that I wanted to steal for myself, like just every single time. It's really, I just think there's no better way than pairing to level yourself up.
Yeah, totally. And you know, I think that Process Kit, the product, is getting up to a point now where I'm starting to get into the really more complex features. And also in my learning, like I'm sort of beyond like, there's an error message. I know how to troubleshoot an error on the page. What I usually more turn to help for these days are like, all right, so this past week I've been working on the custom fields feature. So users can create their own custom fields on projects. Those fields might have several options, selectable options. Like, it's a really more complex beast, and it's taken over a week now, and I've spent a few hundred bucks on Code Mentor getting through this thing. When I go look for help now, it's like, help me figure out the strategy. What are the database models going to look like on this thing? Like, what are the techniques that I should start reading up on to do this? You know, it's like, I need more help at the beginning of a feature than when I hit an error, basically.
Sure. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, someone that's been doing this for a while, you build up this wisdom. And so sometimes I will take a certain approach or avoid certain things because I'm just like, you know, I've done this 20 times now. And every time I do it this way, it ends up hurting me later on. And it's hard to predict the future in software projects. It's really tricky. But if there's certain things you start to develop like kind of a sixth sense for, and you kind of go, oh, wait a second, we should probably stop before we do it this way. And it's really hard to develop that until you've actually like felt the pain. So right. Having someone on your team that has, you know, a history of that pain already can be really useful.
Yeah. So, all right, I'm convinced.
Any concern about?
Yeah, the constraint, as always, is I'm fully bootstrapped, self-funded. So I do have plenty of cash that I could throw at this, but I want to really sustain this person at the very least through the end of 2019 on a part-time basis. And ideally after that to go full-time. I've been through experiences in the past where I'm spending a lot on outsourcing to developers and then the cash runs out and I have to put them on pause and all that. I don't want to run into that again. And AudienceOps is going pretty well at this point, kind of surprisingly well this year. It's actually still been growing quite a bit. And so that's looking good, but I've seen that take sudden unexpected turns as well. So I you know, as a bootstrapper, I always need to be keep my eye on the cash flow. I think cash is in a pretty good spot right now, but I've seen it go really weird in the past. And so I'm always a little bit, what's the word, like trigger shy when it comes to hiring someone, especially for a long term.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so with that in mind, I most likely, and so the other thing is that I do want someone like a good 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So then if you crunch the math, like we're probably not looking at a US based person or Canada or most of Europe, you know, so, you know, probably looking overseas or South America or something like that. But, you know, I need somebody who is a good communicator, can get on video calls and pair program with me and things like that. So I'm questioning what the market for that sort of developer is. Mm. And then there's also the question of, How many like freelance developers are actually available for like a part-time position ongoing? Because I feel like people are either looking to leave a job and get another full-time position, or they're just doing quick one-off gigs here and there, and they're not ready to commit to that sort of like mid-range thing.
So yeah.
That's a question.
I think it's actually nice that you're willing to take a decent chunk of someone's time. I think if you're like, I want 5 hours a week, it's like, that might be tough to keep someone regularly there. But if you become like a decent percentage of their take home effectively, I think you're likely to see someone stick a bit longer.
Yeah. Like that model works pretty well in AudienceOps when hiring writers. Like we have a lot of and like other people on that team. So there are plenty of people who literally spend like half or 60% of their week for years on end with AudienceOps. Mm. And that's great for those freelancers. I wonder if that's different when we're talking about developers, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see.
I have this luxury, which is I'm not in your day-to-day. To me, like I'm not concerned with ProcessKit in a way. Like we're friends, and so I want you to be happy over the long term. And like ProcessKit, you're like hyper-focused on that. But to me, I'm thinking of your arc. Your lifespan. And so it's like, I like this move for you because like I wanted you to like take on the programming thing and try it on ProcessKit because I was like, well, for years you'll have this skill that will benefit you later on.
That was, first of all, I need to thank you and everyone else at that trip to Martha's Vineyard last about almost a full year ago now. At that point, I had already begun sort of dabbling in learning to code, but I was super beginner at that point. You guys really encouraged me to keep going on it. It has been a career-changing move, and I couldn't be happier about it.
Awesome.
It's been amazing.
That's great. I'm so psyched. Yeah, I was so glad you went down this path.
And I love it too. I mean, I've always been really into creating things on the web, but now I can actually create them rather than just draw pictures of them, basically. So
totally. Yeah. So to me, it's like, hopefully this person accelerates your progress, and then the new product is so compelling that people sign up in droves and you make all the money you want to, and that'd be great. But even if it doesn't, you're investing in your future programming ability. So things you're doing 10, 15 years from now, you could still be a better programmer, that, and this will be, continue to pay off for you.
That's really, you know, that's really true. I'm glad you said that, because like I thought of this person as like, yeah, they could help me bust through roadblocks faster, but I didn't really think about it from the standpoint of like, oh, they're actually going to make me a better programmer long term. So that's really good. And I've also been thinking about this more, not just about Process Kit. That's obviously the product I'm pretty much focused on right now, but my next several years of like, if I'm thinking about like, what is the next business after Audience Ops, or, you know, Audience Ops is running on its own, so what's the business that I'm trying to build now? It's a software company. It's a software products company. And Process Kit might just be one of several products. I mean, I already have Sunrise KPI out there that needs a little bit of love and attention at some point. And I have like a list of 10 other apps that I want to build at some point. So the way I see this hire is like kind of like employee number one, and their first task is to work on Process Kit. But if they're going to be working with me 3 days a week for the rest of the year, there are definitely going to be periods, I think, where we need to sort of pause new features and work on marketing or more customer development or something like that, where I want that person kind of, for a week, go work on Sunrise, or let's hack on this internal software that we're going to use for ourselves and maybe release later as a product. Like, because these are ideas that I would love to hack on, and I could now be able to build a simple Rails app to do any idea at this point, but I'm so focused on Process Kit. But if I had somebody else on the team, like, you know, we're basically investing in the product line from whatever this new company is, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there might be an opportunity to find someone that's interested in learning some of the customer development, marketing, sales kind of stuff that you have more experience with.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, the thing that comes into my head as you think about finding this person is, I think I would almost optimize for teaching quality, and whether or not when you work with them, do you feel like you're getting better because they're explaining it well and they are like encouraging you to improve? Yeah. Versus like, are they very productive by themselves?
Right. Yeah. I was thinking like, because this is a long-term, hopefully somebody who sticks with me for a long time. So I think I'll spend a while looking for the right person, you know, give it at least a good month of, and have a whole process where, you know, typical application and interviews and maybe test projects, but have part of that be like, we're going to do a pair programming session and you can help me build some feature or something like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, see how that goes.
That's great. If this team grows, then they can help the next person too. And like,
yeah.
I think someone that teaches well, in addition to being a good operator themselves, is like such a force multiplier, because it will raise the level of everyone around them.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Cool. So if anybody's listening and knows somebody and wants to give me an intro, I'm probably looking pretty soon. So.
All right.
So what else is up with Tuple? Like, what's next? I know you've been shipping a lot of features and onboarding.
We're in kind of a stabilize and refine phase for like the next few weeks, I think. We've just shipped two major features, which is the webcam support and then dual cursors, where each person gets their own mouse on a call. And those are both big features and complicated. And we did like a not minimal, but a lightweight V1 of both of them. So we're doing a V2 of webcam right now. And then I think we're going to loop back and fix some bugs on dual cursor and just kind of like try to clean up a little UX things and the bugs and whatnot. It doesn't feel like we're missing any big features at the moment. It's more like each feature could be a little bit better. There's feedback that comes in fairly regularly that suggests, okay, this should work like this or like that.
It's a Mac desktop app that you install.
That's right.
I know that you're still only like a year or so into having it out there. Like, do you deal with like updates from like Mac OS? Does that ever like throw you guys for a loop? Like Apple releases some update and it screws with your thing?
Not yet, I think. Yeah. So far so good. We support the last two, officially support the last two operating system versions. So High Sierra and Mojave, I think are the last two. And so like a new one is coming out soonish. So we're gonna have to get our hands on that beta at some point and make sure we still work. I'm not anticipating any huge problems. There was some things going from High Sierra to Mojave where like the permission scheme for accessing the microphone changed or something like that. So there have been some small things, but nothing has been terrible. It was interesting though. We watched the keynote this year, the WWDC keynote where they talk about the software stuff. And it's now a stressful thing where it's like, maybe they'll just be like, oh, and guess what? We've decided to offer this incredible like remote control app for free or something, or decided we're going to lock down all permissions so no one can do this or something. So it was a little bit stressful, but there was no bad news, fortunately.
Very cool. Very cool.
And eventually, like right now we're only Mac, but I think eventually we'll probably end up on other platforms too. We get a lot of people asking us for a Linux client. So when the Mac app feels good enough.
Who are these people who use Linux?
developers, man. Crazy.
Yep.
They have weird taste. So I think eventually we'll probably get ground on a Linux client later.
Before Windows.
I mean, we get rarely asked for Windows, but frequently asked for Linux. Hmm. Yeah. When we get asked for Windows, it's almost always like, hey, we have Linux and Windows. But it's almost never like, hey, we have Windows. Can you support that? I think some of that is a side effect of the fact that we're on Mac. With Mac, it's built on top of a Unix anyway. So it's sort of not a giant leap to go over to Linux. Mm-hmm. But Windows is a big leap.
Yeah. Very cool. And so you're mainly focused on selling to businesses and teams. Like,
we do. Yeah. Our two main customer types are like a software development team in a company and then like a freelancer that has clients or mentees or things like that. Hmm.
Like I'm wondering about what your strategy post, you know, quote unquote launch, as we get back into that conversation. Like, so currently you're working through your early access list. You've been doing that for a while. What's the strategy after that? Is it kind of typical online marketing, content, SEO, word of mouth? Like, what are you looking to do after that?
Sort of not totally sure, to be honest. We do have a nice amount of word of mouth happening though. And so we actually finished inviting everyone that was on the early access list at least once a couple months ago. And we're still signing up new customers. So people come in, they give us their email, we send them an invite. So we still apparently have a working marketing funnel just from podcast appearances and talks and tweets and people saying nice things and word of mouth and all that. So we have a decent steady state of customers coming in, it seems like. Fingers crossed it won't just go away. I have ideas for things to sort of increase that number. I would say my sweet spot is in developer education. So I spend a lot of time making interesting educational content for developers. And so I think that'll probably be the play when we decide we want to really like spin up a marketing engine is like, okay, what kind of really interesting stuff can I make that developers will appreciate that we can kind of tie to ourselves?
Yeah, I like it. I just feel like education is still the way to market these sorts of products. I feel like the thing of like a typical lead magnet thing, like content markety, says somebody who runs a content marketing company. But like these days, the product is the marketing more than anything else, but that still needs education built around it. And there's a place for SEO and growing traffic through content and that sort of stuff. But like, as I'm thinking about Process Kit, it's really... It's same idea. Like I'm thinking through ideas for like writing a book about how to organize processes for your client services company and like just teaching about the problem that the product exists to solve, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. I think that's probably an evergreen strategy. Like people want to get better at stuff. And so if you can help them, you're probably going to benefit. Also, both our products kind of have a nice inherent virality to them where like you use them with other people.
Yeah. So yeah. And there's one of the most requested things for Process Kit that I haven't built yet is the ability to share with guests.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I've been going in circles on about the pricing, like how, because it's currently you it's priced per user that you invite into your account. So how do we price for guests? Like when somebody wants to invite their clients or invite like a temporary freelancer. And so I'm still trying to figure that question out, but I do know for a fact that I need to build that feature. It's one of the most requested things. Yeah. I mean, hopefully that'll have some sort of like virality component to it. You know, you're sharing it with someone who might go bring it into their company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We started to see that here and there, which is awesome. It's like, I used it with my friend and can I get a copy? It's like, oh, it's very cool.
I'm really jealous of your of Tuple because it's so simple. I mean, obviously it's really
what
it's in terms of what it does, like to use it. I can get value from it by signing up today, getting on a call with somebody.
Yeah.
And I've gotten my money's worth. Done. And with Process Kit, I need somebody to evaluate the feature set, compare it to the tools that they're using now, then decide it's worth trialing. Then if it's good, they're going to see what it looks like with a real project. Then if that's good, then they need to invite their whole team. And then their team needs to learn it and they all need to get on board. And they need to slowly shift from their current tools over to Process Kit over the course of probably a month. Like,
yeah,
it's a tough mountain to get over for the adoption piece. And I'm trying to figure that out.
You know? Yeah, I don't envy that. Although then they're more tied to you, right? If you do make good inroads on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been, you know, thinking through like a productized service, you know, consulting thing.
You're kidding.
Like, yeah, I know. Like, you know, who would have thought? Where, you know, like me or eventually somebody on my team works with them for a month, audit your processes, give you our playbook, get your all set up, give your team like a private workshop and you guys are good to go. And that, they pay for that. So they've invested in it and all that.
That totally feels at the play here for products like this, where it's like, just lean into that fact and make it less scary. Like right. Rather than me being like, I'm thinking of this project I have to run, which is get on Process Kit and it sounds terrible and I have a lot of responsibilities and it's complicated. And you're like, no, we're going to run the project. It's like, oh, okay. Well, maybe now. That's worth thousands of dollars to me possibly just to have you do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I think it would still require their participation in in getting on board, you know, but in terms of like, you know, getting over the what do I do first, second, and third, and what's really the right strategy with our client onboarding process and all that. Like we could have importable templates and all that, you know.
Yeah. Just knowing that you're gonna project manage that and help me achieve the mutual goal is a different mental shift.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool, man. Good place to wrap it up here.
Let's do it.
We don't have any sort of like formal ending here. So
I know. It's just racking my brain. I was like, I wish I knew the official sign off, but there isn't one.
Yeah. We're just like, all right, bye. That's right. Your theme song. So yeah, we're going to try to get another episode out next week, hopefully, but don't quote me on that. It's very possible we will not. So,
all right.
Yeah. Ben, thanks for joining us. Obviously your stuff is at tuple.app. .app. Of course. Awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It was fun.
All right.
See you.